What are the four or five conferences that you might want to go to in your industry? Who are the biggest players that are going to be there? Find their contact information, put together an interview series or an article or something like that. Give them a reason for when you reach out to them to respond instead of just an ask, or, you know, it's more of a give than an ask. You know what I'm saying? Than like, you know, I'd like to include you and promote you and that kind of thing. And that works pretty well.
Welcome to the Influence and Scale podcast, where content creators, marketers, and entrepreneurs learn how to increase their influence and scale their business using content marketing. My name is Tyler Basu, and alongside my business partner, Chuck Anderson, we'll be sharing proven strategies to help you grow your audience, create great content, and generate more traffic, leads, and sales for your business. Thanks so much for joining us. Now let's dive in. What's up? This is Tyler Basu. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. One of the things that I enjoy most about creating content is the fact that it allows you to collaborate and network with other people that want to be a part of that. So when you have your own blog or you have your own podcast or you have your own YouTube channel, for example, that gives you a platform and an audience that you can leverage to reach out to other people and initiate relationships with other people by interviewing them. And today I've brought a guest on the show that's done this in a very strategic way, and he's been a content creator for over 10 years now, but he recently got very, very strategic with who he wanted to initiate relationships with and created a content plan that was centered on initiating those relationships. And so this is John Schumacher. I actually first came across him back in 2016 or so. I was working for Thinkific and I was putting together some training on how to use webinars to sell courses. And John was one of the webinar experts that I came across in my research, and we ended up doing an interview together, and he ended up sharing his insights with Thinkific's customers who were all trying to sell their courses with using webinars. And so we just kept in touch since then. We did this interview not too long after I left my job at Thinkific. And so in our interview together, we dig into how he's leveraged his platform, his podcast, his contributor accounts to large publications to initiate relationships with some pretty hard to reach people, interview them, create some content with them, and then from there, figure out how else he can support them and serve them. So I think you'll enjoy this conversation. This is John Schumacher, and you can find him at johnschumacher.com. Well, John, thank you so much, man, for taking the time to be on this podcast. I'm excited to speak with you, and there's a lot that I want to cover with you.
Yeah, I'm excited, Tyler. Yeah, it's always fun to speak to you and really admire what you're doing and growing and all the challenges you're facing head on. And it's really fun to see now that you're, you know, stepped away from Thinkific, now you're crushing it on your own, man. So you're a real all-star.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. You know, I did get completely fed up with trial and error. So I think I made the smart move of hiring some mentors and just doing what they say. And because I just got sick of trying to figure things out on my own, man. So that's helped. But anyway, that's a whole other topic. I covered some of your highlights in the introduction there. But what I'd love to hear is like why you even became an entrepreneur in the first place. Like, can you take us back to why you jumped into business? Were you always an entrepreneur, and like what brought you into this world?
Yeah, no, I was not always an entrepreneur. I mean, my father was a businessman. He had a successful insurance business that he exited when he was in his 30s. And he's had a few different businesses, but myself, I mean, I actually was in healthcare as a physical therapist. So I had no entrepreneurial background really before I jumped into, you know, marketing and sales and things like that I'm doing now. So the main reason I got into it was freedom. I mean, I wanted control of my life. Like a big reason a lot of people want to start their own business or their own venture or be self-employed is they want control, right? They don't want to work at 9 to 5. They don't want to work under somebody else. They want to have control over their livelihood. And so that was the biggest motivator for me when I was working as a physical therapist. I was going all in on that. I loved it. And then I just kind of burn out. I read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad that completely screwed up my brain.
Right.
And said, what am I doing? You know? And so I started looking at other ways of making money. And yeah, that's how I came across this thing called the internet back. This was maybe 12 years ago or so. I started in healthcare actually creating content. I was one of the first, maybe a handful of PTs who were putting content online back then. And that's kind of, I just kind of fell in love with new media and marketing and just kind of kept learning and growing from there.
Okay, very cool. I didn't realize that Rich Dad Poor Dad was what sparked the same thing happened to me. I read it at 17 years old, so you can imagine how much it messed up my head.
Yeah. Well, you had a head start then, I guess.
sort of, but not a lot of people take you very seriously when you're 17 or 18 and you look like you're 12.
Yeah, well, hey, I guess it builds character.
Yeah, for sure. So when did you actually transition outward? Like, when did you make the change from being a physical therapist to jumping full-time into this online business and online marketing world? And I know you, or I think I first came across you and spoke to you when you were positioned as the expert on webinars and helping people set up webinars and helping other businesses, you know, create their webinar funnels. That was when I first came across you. But was that your first online business, or were there others that came before that?
Now, there were a couple others before that. So my first one, this will go way back. I had a brand called physicaltherapyguru.com.
Nice.
We had a little logo and website. And this was before the days of lead pages or anything. Yeah. So I actually had to hire somebody to custom make like a sales page for my ebook that I was selling for like $17. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing. So that was my first brand. And that was my first online sale. I remember my phone buzzing. I got like a PayPal notification, and this was many years ago, for a $17 ebook. And I was like, oh my God, I was jumping down the street happy, you know, this is actually going to work and all this stuff. And, you know, and I sold a few more for sure, but didn't really know what I was doing. Didn't really understand that I needed distribution or, you know, channels of marketing to get out there in front of more people. But that was my first brand. I was creating video content. Some of those videos I cringe are still on YouTube today, like 11 years later. But hey, you know, so I was putting content out there, videos. I created a couple of video courses, a couple of ebooks, and that was my first dabble, I'll say, in online marketing. It was in that space.
Got it. Was there a specific point in that journey as an online entrepreneur where you had felt like, okay, finally, this is really working, and this is making me more than what I was earning as a physical therapist, and so now I'm jumping into this completely full time?
You know, I did not have like a ton of early success, certainly not to the point where I was going to replace my income as a PT, which, you know, I made a decent living. So I was doing this part time. At first I was making a few $100, and then I was making a couple $1,000, you know. But that wasn't really until I created a couple brands before I really started making like thousands of dollars, you know. Mm-hmm. So the physical therapy guru, yeah, I made a few $100 here and there. I launched a brand called New Wave Healthcare, which was actually more of an agency, like a consulting. And then also I had some writing that I was paid for, and actually had a live video show at that time. I was one of the first PTs to launch like a live weekly podcast interview series, basically, where back when I was using Google Hangouts, when that was brand new, that was a brand new thing. And I did that every week for an entire year. We had one of those and got some traction with that and started making a little bit of money with that, but ultimately realized that, you know, I just love marketing. So from that point I pivoted and into marketing and launched a brand called Hangouts That Convert. So we did like a program. It was more of a product than a company.
You know, I think I remember seeing that. Maybe it wasn't the webinars after all that I first saw you for. Because that name's ringing a bell.
Hangouts That Convert. Yep. And so I had a partner at the time, Michael Bloom, who was a wonderful man to work with. But we launched this brand called Hangouts That Convert, basically teaching people how to use live video and Google Hangouts to get attention and visibility and market and stuff like that. And so we were actually like we actually became within about a year's time, one of the foremost gurus on that, like for how to use it for business and marketing. We had a best-selling book. We had a course that we were selling and some consulting work and stuff like that with individuals and also a few brands and stuff that had seen our stuff and wanted us to show them how to do it and stuff like that. So
got it.
That was the first business that actually was making, you know, into the thousands of dollars, you know, like where we would go. And that's where I got into webinars. So I started off, we didn't have much of a list at the time. This was, God, over 5 years ago, probably. You know, I started pitching this course on webinars, right? I started doing like the JV webinar circuit with friends, and we, you know, had a couple hundred people here, 500 there. You know, I took it on the road, I call it, so to speak. And it sold pretty well. It actually sold really well. It was a hot new sexy item at the time. So, the, you know, we were selling it between $200 and $500, which is a good price point for mass market webinars, and did really well and learned how to pitch webinars and all that kind of stuff on webinars. So that was really the first brand that actually started seeing, like, you know, I remember the day I made, you know, my first like $1,000 from a webinar. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. You know, and like, and just kind of kept going from there. And then launched the webinar summits, which you may have seen. That's kind of when I started pivoting more broadly after I had done some webinars for a while and studied with others and stuff, was when I started branching out and hanging my hat on that more.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's when you and I did an interview. I think it was back in like 2016 or 17. I was creating content for Thinkific, and these were course creators that wanted to know how to sell their course. And I looked up webinars, and there, you know, there were, I came across a ton of your stuff. You had the course, you had some free resources, some videos that you had done. So you ended up sharing some really good insight. That was actually one of the most valuable videos that we shared with the Thinkific community, was that one that you did, where you shared your advice on using webinars. So that was cool. Are you still focused on that to any extent? Do you do the occasional webinar funnel for other businesses still? Or?
Yeah. No, I have. So we still do like services. So in 2017, I had a partnership that we're no longer together on, but we were doing like the full agency model with like webinar builds and funnels and stuff like that. And yes, I still do some of that today. I have an agency I'm aligned with that does the fulfillment for it.
Okay.
I'm not like typing out all the scripts and content and stuff like that. It's just not, I mean, I know about it, and I'm certainly good at like looking at a webinar and like finding constraints and like looking at their messaging and helping them to improve all of the selling positioning and all that kind of stuff. But I don't really do the fulfillment myself anymore. So, but we still do. Yeah, webinar builds, marketing funnels, things like that. I mean, I can't get away from it, to be honest. Like, if you put like webinar coach or consultant into Google, I'm like right there.
You're right there.
I'm at the top of like all of Google. So I get a drip of leads from that each week, and my YouTube channel. I just have created a lot of content. Like, I've been very prolific on like podcasts and videos and, you know, just some real basic SEO stuff, you know, to kind of rank me for some longer tail keywords in that industry. And, you know, referrals just kind of have done doing it over time. So yeah, I still do get leads, and help people consult, either improve their webinar or build one for them, or with them rather. That's probably a better way to say it. Cause It's better to, if they participate some, versus just like wanting an expert to try to extract everything and put it into their brain, you know?
Right. So. Yeah. That makes sense. Well, so I'm curious, cause there has been a slight shift in your focus this past, I guess maybe since the beginning of this year, the past 6 months or so, cause you've got this podcast now, $1 billion legacy, and you're creating content and interviewing like some pretty high level CEOs and executives and such. So what was the thinking there? Can you walk us through like why you decided to go in that direction, and what are you focused on with that brand?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And I think this is, you know, I was just reading, I'll try to put this into concise wording. A couple of things shifted me. You know, I was just reading the other day, G. Abraham's book, How to Getting Everything You Can Out of Everything You've Got, which is a great book for anybody to revisit a few times and kind of remind yourself of the real fundamentals of what it takes. He's got some good stuff, but yeah, he talks a lot about, you know, the need to constantly create breakthroughs. And, you know, one of my mentors this past year has been Adam Urbanski, and he has a saying that it's not necessarily what you do, but who you do it with that makes the biggest difference. Like, you know, there's a lot of very intelligent marketers and business people, and, you know, a lot of them are technicians, and they kind of get caught in that technician's trap of just becoming better at their craft. And don't get me wrong, like, you need to be really good at your craft, or you need to know somebody who is. That's another discussion. But it's really who you work with. Like, you know, you could be the world's most brilliant, let's say, online marketing strategist. Like, that's what I focus on a lot. And you know, if you're working with the classic crew that everyone else is, you're gonna struggle to have major breakthroughs in your business. And there's a few people, you know, a lot of the guys that are in that spot that have a real stranglehold on that industry. And, you know, it's just like the reason I started that brand, Billion Dollar Legacy, was is a networking tool and brand to meet more successful business leaders, to meet leaders of organizations that are doing bigger things. And, you know, there's some selfish reasons for that and some worldly reasons. Like the selfish reasons are obviously I want to build a power network of people that are influential and like have a lot of, you know, funds and things like that, and do some awesome big projects together, be paid really well, and those kind of things. But there's, you know, another part to me that really likes to help people share their message in a bigger way. And I just find it exciting to work with bigger folks and organizations on their projects, because you'd be shocked. A lot of them don't know the skills that like, you know, and that I've learned, and, you know, things like that. And we can really add a lot of value to those businesses and to those leaders with our skill sets and be paid a lot more for it. I don't know how deep you want to go down that rabbit hole, but you know, as far as like structuring things or whatever, but
I am definitely curious. Like I understand how clever it was to create a podcast that essentially gives you the platform to reach out to this segment of the market or these types of people and get a conversation with them. Did you launch that already having like an idea of something you could provide them, a product or a service that you could provide them? Or was the priority at first just getting into conversations with these people and then figuring out how you could help them and going from there? Like, was there a sequence?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly had an offer in mind for them. Of course, once you get out there and talk to the people, I mean, you're going to hear a variety of responses, right? So it's wise if you're going to play that game where it's a little more custom and flexible than like the productized offer kind of that are out there. Then, you're going to have to be somewhat flexible and listen to the market. So, but yeah, I had an offer in mind. Basically, you know, I put together a team of six or seven people who've agreed to be a part of the project, and we could basically come in and quarterback their entire thought leadership platform for them.
Cool.
You know, so we can build their sites, we can get them clear on their stories and messages, and, you know, build out, you know, some of their assets and content and all that kind of stuff. So, so that's the idea behind that project. Now, some people want pieces of that. Some people, like I'm in discussions right now with an organization on quarterbacking an online summit for them.
Okay.
So I'm still kind of figuring out some of that as well myself as we speak, but I'm just being flexible. But the main goal is to meet bigger players, bigger organizations, and I don't really want to scale my business through quantity as much as I do like the size of the deals. I'm looking at potential percentage deals more now than I used to be versus just a flat fee and stuff. So there's ways to scale or build assets around you beyond just cranking, you know, a bunch of clients through a funnel and those kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah. In your case, it's more about handpicking a smaller amount that you've got some very big projects in the works with.
That's the idea. Yeah. You know, and partnering more as a partner, as an advisor, as an investor versus a consultant or, you know, just a coach or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And this ties back to you recognizing that one of your biggest strengths is strategy and maybe not always fulfillment for every one of the pieces that's involved in any of those projects. So it sounds like you've intentionally selected people that you can lean on for that fulfillment process, which keeps you more involved in the strategy and the relationship building that happens to get these clients in the first place.
And that's where I want to go more and more too. For me, like in my dream business, I'd have under 10 clients. I have a piece of the pie, so to speak, either in an equity or revenue share. I do get a bit of a flat fee on top of that, but that's kind of where I go. I recently hired another mentor who's done like larger private equity deals and stuff like that to kind of help mentor me around putting deals together and, you know, those kind of things. So yeah, that's where I'm heading more and more is, you know, how can I find bigger organizations or individuals that I can partner with and bring in what I'm calling my dream team, you know, like the people that are really good at fulfillment, and bring them in, make sure they're happy with a good client, and then also, you know, the client's happy as well. So I'm kind of looking to be the broker of the deals more than just you know, the fulfillment person. And that's really my genius is I have a knack for meeting people and getting to people. And, you know, I'm a people person. Like I always feel energized with discussions like this. Like I always feel de-energized if I'm typing on my computer too long, working on a slide deck sure. or something like that. So
yeah.
I want to do more of what I love, and which is really talking with people, making deals, you know, building relationships, having fun, those kind of things.
Got it. And so at this point, is the podcast then what's allowing you to have that initial conversation with this target market? Or is there other sales or marketing happening in addition to that? Or is it like, for now, is it everybody's coming through as a guest on the podcast, and from there, you perhaps have some follow-up conversations afterwards?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Kind of like the flow of that part of it. Like, how do you reach more influential people in your industry, whether that's business leaders or whatever? So basically, there's two I call them targets. I don't know if that's a good word or not, but you know, my podcast is one target I can put people into, you know, or invite them to. And then another strategy is an article invite strategy. So I've done that with Entrepreneur. I have a column for Entrepreneur. You could even do it on LinkedIn. I know my friend John Corcoran was big on that. He kind of collaborated with me on some of those things as well. So basically, the process is three parts: finding a list of individuals or organizations, having a target you can invite them to, and then building the relationship behind that, and then asking for a lot of referrals in between. For example, like I'm getting involved more and more with a group called Conscious Capitalism, and they're an organization with a lot of successful business leaders and people like that. And actually, I found their website. I found their board. They had a list of their board members. So there were 20 of them. I sent out an invite to all 20, and I said, I like what you're doing. I think this is an important message. I'd like to invite you to be a part of an interview series that I'm doing. And that ended up being several podcast interviews and also an article that I did for Entrepreneur. And I think I had 6 of them reply and actually talk with me. And so I built relationships with those people. They referred me to other people. You know, every time at the end of one of these things, I always ask, you know, so like, you know, ask, how can I help you? And they'll usually ask, well, how can I help you? And, you know, I'll say, well, do you know anybody else who'd like to be a part of this? And so I get a little bit of referral juice going too from the people that I do reach from cold outreach, but it's basically cold email. Like cold email I found to work the best for me. Like, and there's tools where you can basically, if you know the URL of their company and their full name, there are tools that will give you their fairly accurately, not all the time, but give you their email. And you could do this with anybody in any industry, really. Like if you know their name and you know their domain, there are tools out there that can help you find their contact information. And if you have an inviting message to them saying, you know, instead of just saying, work with me, buy my stuff, you know, the classic LinkedIn private message pitches we all get like 5 times a day, you know, if you actually are leading with like, hey, and I'd like you to involve you in something, and it's specific to them, and you know, that kind of thing, you can reach out and invite them. And I have a VA right now who's helping me do the initial part of that. At least she's helping me find their names and emails and all that stuff and putting them in a spreadsheet for me. I have a basic template that I'll send out that I modified a bit just to make it more personal. And then I invite them to, you know, either an interview of some kind, whether it's for an article or a podcast. And that's had a fairly good success rate. Of course, I get a lot of people who ignore me, but.
Well, I mean, in that particular example of reaching out to 20 board members and then to get 6 conversations scheduled from that, that's a pretty good win rate for cold outreach. Because, I mean, if you were to send cold emails that say, hey, you know, I'm John and this is what I do, and hey, if you're interested, let's book a call. You know, that those types of outreach emails have a way lower success.
Yeah. Yeah. So the key there was how you phrase it. And so I knew that they were part of that organization.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I included that. And they actually had a conference. So here's a good strategy. Find the biggest conferences. This has worked really well. Find the conferences in your area. And so like there's one in Toronto this month called Collision. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's a big, one of the biggest tech, becoming one of the biggest tech conferences. You know, like the CEO of like Twitter and, you know, all these people are there, a bunch of speakers. And what you do then is say, you know, and if you intend to go or you're open to going, you know, just send them an email, like find the speakers on the page. And the Collision had like 200. And some of them are big time people too, like VCs and people like that. And what you do then is just, you know, put together some language or an email around that and just say like going to Collision conference. And then, and it gets a high open rate because it's very specific. They're already going to that in the near future. And it gets a very high open rate. You can use Streak to, you know, for Gmail to make, to measure the open rates. And you reach out to them and say, you know, hey, I'm going to be heading to the Collision conference here in the next such and such time. I'm doing an interview series on people who are going to the conference. Would you like to participate with some of your peers? I'm reaching out to so-and-so as well. And a lot of people will respond with a yes, or they'll want to know more information. So you do get a pretty good response rate when you target, when you make it specific, right, enough about that person. So like with the Conscious Capitalism, I had that in the title, like going to Conscious Capitalism, which I ended up going to the conference actually and met him as well. But I said, I'm going to the conference. I'd love to help you promote what you're doing. You know, let's do an interview. And certainly if you have, you know, a bit of an audience that helps, or like I had a column for Entrepreneur. Some of the bigger publications don't really like quote articles as much, but you know, there's kind of a fine line there, but that's helped me a little bit too, saying, hey, I'm going to be putting together an article for Entrepreneur. You know, I'd love to quote you in it. And not a ton, but a lot of people will, enough people will respond to it. And so that's really huge. Like, so, you know, what are the four or five conferences that you might want to go to in your industry? Who are the biggest players that are going to be there? You know, find their contact information, put together an interview series or an article or something like that. Give them a reason for when you reach out to them to respond instead of just an ask, or, you know, it's more of a give than an ask. You know what I'm saying? Than like, you know, I'd like to include you and promote you and that kind of thing. And that works pretty well.
Yeah. That's awesome. So you've just basically got this rhythm going of, you know, a certain number of outreach emails to these CEOs or these kind of high level executives and just to, you know, invite them to include an insight into an article for Entrepreneur or be a guest on your podcast. And I guess in your case, you don't need a huge number of clients over the course of a year to build a pretty big business on around this, right? And have some pretty great partnerships in place. And so just that constant rhythm of maybe it's only a few interviews a month that you're needing to do, you know, a few podcast episodes a month, and you've got an entire business that's built around that.
Yeah. I mean, it's very much possible. So it's, you know, there's a saying I saw at the end of the year. I think my friend Ron Reich said this. He's like, you know, if you double your content, if you double your offers and you double your network, you'll double your business, you know? And it's like, you know, for me, doubling the network was a big thing because I wanted to up level the deals I'm doing. So I want to know like people in like private equity. I want to know people in like legal, or, you know, I want to know in politics. Like, I've expanded my mind of like who I want in my network.
Right. Right. And not just the internet marketers.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily at all. I mean, I still like working with like experts and people like that, but I think for me to grow, like to where I want to get to, so where I can actually get involved with certain assets or certain ventures that have the potential to go beyond where I'm at now, I think I need to continue to up level who I work with and continue to just build my network both on like my friends and my connections and a variety of industries, but also on the fulfillment side. Like, I want to know like some of the top, like if what I'm going to offer them is has to do with like digital marketing or things like that, I want to know some really solid people who, when I bring in one of these deals, that I'm going to say, you know what, like, you know, hey, I got this client. We're working on this. He needs this and this. Are you open to working on this project with us? And a lot of people would say yes. You know, they'll take a client or they'll want to work with a bigger person or be involved in an organization that's doing important things. So I'm looking to be kind of like the deal maker more than I am anything else. And my ultimate vision would be to get a piece of the pie of some decent size, you know, companies or decent size, you know, endeavors. And so that's kind of where I'm going with things. And it's definitely a learning experience. But I think for me, since I really don't have the desire right now, at least in my mind, to like scale through volume, like a lot, like most people do, this is what I'm looking at.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. So John, I want to just shift gears a little bit and kind of learn a bit more about what's happening behind the scenes and how you operate as an entrepreneur. I wanted to start with some of the challenges that you faced as an entrepreneur. I want to cover both an external challenge and an internal challenge. So what would you say has been one of the toughest external challenges that you faced throughout your journey? This could be like something that was circumstantial, or, you know, a business that went bad, or a partnership that went bad. What was something that was tough for you, and what was the lesson that you pulled from that you could share with us?
Yeah, external, huh? You know, I think I've learned a lot around, you mentioned partnerships. I've had a couple of good ones and a couple of rougher ones too. I think the biggest lesson out of that is to really make sure that you are in line with your partners philosophically, not just to make money and stuff like that. I've made that mistake before where I kind of had a feeling it wasn't going to work out in the long run. I kind of went with it anyway because I felt like there was a lot of learning to be had or a lot of income upside and things like that. So I think, you know, be careful with your partnering. Like, I think partner, for me, I like partners a lot because, one, I like working with other people. I love people. I get kind of lonely if I don't ever have people to work around with and stuff. But also, you know, make sure that philosophically you're in the same ballpark of where you see things, you know, make sure to communicate and talk and things like that. Other external stuff. You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I'd have to think about that a little bit more. I mean, I've been pretty blessed, I saved up some money before I made the leap years ago, and I've been able to make enough money throughout the last 5 years to be full time and not have to work for anybody else or anything like that. So,
Okay. So there's not some crazy Elon Musk story of risking bankruptcy kind of thing. And
I've never been close. Although, you know, there's certainly challenges. I mean, geez, this is not an easy endeavor. Like, I worry, I have stress, you know, about like the next level or keeping things going. Or when you're a coach or consultant and you're not cranking through like this kind of more leveraged model, you know, things, you can make a lot of money fast, and then you could be maybe a little slower for a period of time. Sometimes you want to rest. Sometimes it's just, you know, you can't find the right kind of deals, you know, in a certain situation. So there's certainly stress, you know, with being self-employed and doing your own thing. So I'm not going to make it sound like I've had no issues. I'm certainly have had moments of stress, or, you know, that partnership that kind of went south. We took on too many clients too fast, and some of them were outside of scope, and, you know, we had to give back some money and do some things like that. And it was just super stressful. You know, I tend to care a little too much sometimes, you know, about things. And when you do that, you can really wear a hole in your gut kind of thing. So it's definitely, in the name of growing and stretching, sometimes you'll misstep and make wrong decisions, and you got to own them. And sometimes they're very painful.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good point. So then today, when you evaluate a potential business partner, is there a certain conversation or certain things you want to figure out, you want to clarify up front, just to help prevent that same challenge from happening?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I just actually partnered again, not on like an official like equity. Well, it is an equity deal, but it's not legal yet. We'll probably get to that point. Yeah, I would just make sure you have a discussion about where you want to go with the company. Like, I recently partnered with a company called Access WP, which is a WordPress support company, and I'm helping them grow. And in exchange of that, they're giving me 50% of their business. And, you know, we talked up front, you know, about the long-term vision of where we want to go with this asset, you know, the steps we want to take, and the end result. So are we going to have an exit, or are you open to an exit if we get to that point? You know, that's to be discussed early on if it's a sellable asset, which this one is. And also, you know, it's not a bad idea to have a little bit of a trial on the front end of that before you just go and get like tax IDs and, you know, operating agreements and all kinds of stuff written up. So we're going to take, you know, 60, 90 day period, make sure we like working together, make sure that, you know, we're making progress and we're still passionate about the project 90 days from now, and then we'll make it more official. That's sort of what we decided on. So I think just, you know, it's communication is a big one, but it's like, I think someone called it the beer test. Like if you wouldn't go out and have a beer with that person, like,
right,
you know, like probably shouldn't be partnering with them, you know? So part of it is philosophy. That's a big one. And, you know, obviously you want complementary skills too. I'm more of the blabbermouth, like networker. And like, I'm not as afraid to knock on doors or cold email people. Whereas my partner in that, in Axis WP, he's more behind the scenes. He's more operations and a little bit of marketing and more like blogging and SEO. Whereas I'm more like, hey, like, let me go talk to like 50 people this week and like, see if anybody's interested in partnering or doing a deal or something. So,
okay. No, that makes sense. So you're looking for, complementary skill sets, but similar, value system or philosophy.
Which probably most people listening know that, but it's a good reminder because we all make that mistake sometimes. Everything looks good, but you know, maybe the philosophy piece is a little off and
yeah,
you know, I've made that mistake before.
Okay, cool. I appreciate you sharing that. Now you mentioned that book, Jay Abraham's book, Getting Everything You Can Out of All You Got earlier. I'm just curious though, are there any other specific resources, people, books, courses, events, whatever that have helped you learn specifically about partnerships and joint ventures, or maybe even entrepreneurship in general, but is there anything that comes to mind that you'd like to recommend?
Yeah, anything of Jay Abraham's is really good. Chet Holmes also has a great book called The Ultimate Sales Machine. I think it's called Ultimate Sales or Ultimate Selling Machine, something like that. A really good book on like the Dream 100 concept, which is basically what we're talking about here with outreach stuff. So those are great books. Perry Marshall, 80-20 Sales and Marketing is an excellent book on strategic thinking. So those are some really good assets. I think, you know, Russell, you know, whether you like his the way he markets or not, his book Expert Secrets is pretty good as far as like digging in as well. It's really good digging into like what it takes to build an expert business if you're working with those kind of people. Good to Great is another good book by Jim Collins if you're more in like looking at corporate structure or what it takes to build basically what he calls a level 5 leadership organization. So that's a good book as well on like the big picture of the steps to building a great company. Yeah, there's a lot of books out there. I have a whole library of them. But
yeah, I bet. No, this is good though. This is already like half a dozen resources I'll link to in the show notes that'll keep people busy for a couple months probably.
You know, and become the strategist, right? Like if you're a B2B or if you're in marketing, like the strategy will always make the most instead of just being the technician, you know. Now you can make a lot of money as a technician too if you're a great ads person or paid media person and you are good at building campaigns and you, but even that person has to think strategically enough to put together a good deal. Right. And so really understanding strategy is I think the key to continually being able to charge more and grow more and put deals together.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good point. Do you have like any specific habits or activities? Like what are some of the things that you keep consistent in your routine that you feel contribute to your success as an entrepreneur?
Yeah. I mean, I always work off a list. So I'm very focused that way. I'm not super high tech in that regard. I have Google Calendar with all of my time sensitive events. And then I pretty much write on a sheet of paper, like for the week, like what are each of the pieces that I'm using? And I just like paper. I don't know why. I'm a pad and paper guy or pen and paper kind of guy. And
yeah, I'm the same way. I've got like a you know, an actual agenda or whatever you call it, annual planner thing, mm-hmm. plus the notepads for every day. My to-do list goes on a notepad.
Yeah. Yep. So that's pretty much it. I do have a morning routine that I execute most mornings. I think I'm just being consistent. Like I'm pretty consistent now. I change and try things at times. So, you know, but I think that's important too, because I have a saying like, what got you here won't get you there. So So it's like, you know, what got you to this point? Like people, and Jay makes this point a lot, right? It's like people think it's the day-to-day little improvements that make the biggest difference, you know, and if you find your thing, and then yeah, sometimes it comes down to that little incremental improvements. But I know so many people that they're sort of just kind of staying the same, or they're not stretching themselves enough to find the next big breakthrough, because they're a little too content with that little micro improvement idea. So I think it's a little bit of a balance. I mean, certainly you want to have consistent habits and be productive and set yourself up in a good environment so you're productive, all of those things. But I think the biggest breakthroughs, at least for me, have always been like complete shifts of like mind and even model of business sometimes, or thinking. And it's usually those things that lead to the biggest breakthroughs. And almost all of those I found through other people. So like you should always be talking to people, being open to ideas. Not that you should be a squirrel, like sometimes I'm a bit too much of a squirrel at times, but I think once that squirrel finds a nut, and you know, you got to keep looking for a little bit bigger nut. And, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, I think too many people kind of get used to the fishbowl when there's an ocean out there, and, you know, don't be afraid to swim out a little bit.
Awesome. No, that's good. That's a good analogy. Has the way that you define success changed at all over the years? Like if you could think back to when you're first getting started in your career, how do you think that you defined it then? And if it's changed, what would it be today?
Yeah, it has. My first goal, because again, I didn't grow up an entrepreneur myself, and my biggest goal was just freedom, right? Like I'm sick of this job. Like I don't want to work as an employee, you know, and I want to like have my own hours. And my own thoughts were like, I was going to just, you know, create this brand and build this big list and like send out emails and make a bunch of money and all that kind of stuff when I first started. And, you know, I made some progress towards that for sure. You know, I'd built up a decent sized list through our summits and webinars. I have since haven't done as much of that the last couple of years. So the list has gotten a bit old, but it was freedom. And now I have that, just like you have that. And it's like, okay, like I think my thoughts are like, I used to think freedom was the goal, but freedom for me is not the goal. I mean, it's good. It's good to have control of your life, but freedom in and of itself is just empty space. And I think the real joy is like meaningful work, like finding meaningful, productive work. And I used to have this kind of attitude like, you know, oh, you're an employee, blah, 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 you know, that kind of thing. But in reality is like, if you're doing meaningful work in your life, it doesn't matter if you're working for somebody else or yourself or whatever. If you're happy and you're doing meaningful work, I think that is the, as far as that part of life goes, like the ultimate thing.
Yeah, that's a great, great definition.
Yeah, because it's just, you know, freedom is just empty space, and it's great to have control and have your own schedule, which is valuable. But, you know, just make sure that you're not filling it with stuff that doesn't matter, or, you know, that kind of thing. So that's more of my definition now, is like doing meaningful work and having, and wealth to me more and more is like discretionary time. Like there's a lot of people who grind 16-hour days. That to me isn't wealth. I don't care if they're making $1 million. Like that sounds terrible, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think part of that is as you build career capital, like if you find something, you'll like it more and more, and you'll ultimately, in most cases, have more freedom too. I know Cal Newport has a book called So Good They Can't Ignore You, or Be So Good They Can't Ignore You. And he talks about that a lot. Like, you know, most people just follow their passion, or just follow, you know, for the sake of freedom. When in reality, a lot of that freedom comes from building career capital and for, you know, becoming more masterful at what you're best at. So I don't know. I just want to throw that in there too. It's a good, it's an interesting shift, mindset shift from the kind of follow your passion thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So John, I've just got one last question for you, and I really appreciate you being, you know, so generous with your time and your insights. This has been a lot of fun. If we could leave the listeners with a specific action step, what's one thing that they could implement or do right away just to help move them closer to that direction of having a life and a business on their own terms?
Yeah, without a doubt, it's people. Like you need to build your network. That's the fastest way. No algorithm's ever going to change that. you know, no PPC costs rising are going to kill your funnel, you know, all of this kind of stuff. It's like, if you know people, not only are you going to become much smarter and much more connected, but you're just going to accelerate yourself so much. So that, I mean, that's been as old as time, right? Like, finding the right people to be around is almost everything, right? And so whatever stage you're at, whether you're just starting and you're listening to this, or whether you're further along, you already probably know this, is you need to continually take time to build connections, build friendships with your, I guess, for lack of a better word, your dream 100, like, connections, you know, and like finding reasons to give to them, finding ways to connect with them on a consistent basis, because they're the ones that are going to teach you stuff. They're the ones that are going to bring deals together. You know, it's just, you got to find people. And in most cases, this is true. I know for me, I probably spent too much time trying to figure things out on my computer by myself. And that's really slowed me down. One of the things you've done really well is not only, and I think there's a lot of power in what you did with Thinkific. I mean, you worked with Thinkific for a while, but you met a ton of great people. You learned a ton. You built up your career capital in that company. And now that you're on your own, it's just a much smoother transition for you versus if you just had gone out without acquiring that knowledge and career capital. So
yeah, definitely. And a huge shift was me realizing that I don't have to learn everything myself, but I should probably find other people that have already figured that particular thing out, so that when the thing that I need to do comes up, if I don't know how to do it, I find somebody that does and chat with them.
Yep, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, John, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I'll make sure I'm linking to your personal website, johnschumacher.com, and also your podcast. I'll encourage everyone to check out your podcast. So the links to all the resources you mentioned will be in the show notes, and as well as the links to get in touch with you. So thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And I wish you all the best.
Awesome. Thank you, Tyler.
Thanks so much for listening to the Influence and Scale podcast. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. And for show notes, links to resources mentioned, or to learn about how our agency can help you implement a profitable content marketing strategy, visit influenceandscale.com/podcast.